You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. If you've been in the field of mental health for a while, or even if just a short amount of time, I'm sure you know that we as clinicians are at risk for burnout. Especially for those of us who've come out of this pandemic era, it's been rough and burnout has been so heavy for many of us, and not just in our work as therapists, but as moms, as partners, as members of society. Burnout is real and can feel really heavy, and it can be really hard to know what to do with it, which is why I'm excited to chat with my guest today about burnout and how we can cope with it. My guest today is Cynthia Welsh. She is a clinical social worker currently working in private practice with a focus on anxiety, mood disorders, and trauma. She is also a fierce supporter of neurodivergent individuals as the mother of a neurodivergent child and helps families support differences. Cynthia has worked for over 25 years providing care for individuals and families in both English and Spanish in various settings, including outpatient clinics, level 5 schools, private schools, and in-homes and communities. In her time as a clinician, Cynthia has worn many hats, including a board-certified clinical supervisor, director of outpatient clinics, group therapist, trainer, and mentor. She provides clinical supervision and consultation for clinicians, agencies, and schools. Additionally, she provides coaching services and both clinical and restorative retreats. Cynthia incorporates different therapeutic modalities and has certifications in dialectical behavioral therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy from the Beck Institute, mindfulness-based stress reduction with focus on teens, trust-based relational intervention informed, and is a yoga RYT 200. Cynthia lives with her family in Baltimore, and she loves to cook, spend time with her family, and travel the world. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I love to always find out from guests a little bit about their background of how they got into this field. I know you're a clinical social worker. I am too. And I always find there are similarities in our stories and our journeys here, but also differences. But I love finding the commonalities amongst us all. So share with listeners a little bit about how did you get into this work and say, I think I want to be a therapist?
It started very young. I originally thought I wanted to be a nurse and work with children or be a pediatrician. And I just always knew I wanted to work with kids. And as I started to just have like jobs throughout high school and starting into college, I realized that the way people think and work and problem solve, to me, I found it fascinating. And so I was pretty lucky that the university that I went to had a clinical concentration program that was graduate level training at the bachelor level field. And so I was able to apply to that, and there was only 15 people who got to get into it, and I got in. So I was like, all right, let me give this a shot before I go to grad school and decide what I'm doing for sure. And that just sealed the deal. I loved everything about it. Biggest thing that I love is I've always been a problem solver, you know, and if there's something like there isn't one way to do things, there's probably 100. And so if the first, second, 20th doesn't work, let's just keep going until we can see what either helps, makes it better. There isn't, in mental health, as you know, a fix.
Right.
But so that's kind of like where I started and how I got into where I am now is never where I thought I would be.
Right.
Kind of profession. I'm sure we all say that, right? Because we evolve with it. But I love what I'm doing now, but that's how I started.
Yeah. Did you have any desire to go into private practice when you first started like grad school?
No. And really because at the time, so again, I was in graduate school 25 years ago. It was very hard for clinical social workers to be in private practice in my state without being part of an agency. It was doable. And there were people who did it, but it wasn't so big. So actually, that clinical concentration program I told you about was to prep me to be a PsyD. So I was planning to go into getting my doctorate. And one man, Tom Monahan, he was one of my professors in that program, was a clinical social worker. And he changed my wanting and to go into social work instead because of the way he approached problems. And kind of, you know, when you go through social work school, the person and environment, and to just kind of look at the whole picture. And he was so good at what he did that I was like, I'm going to do what he does. And so again, in the evolution of it, in Maryland, especially at University of Maryland, where I went to school, they had a joint program for the MSW and JD. So law and MSW with the purpose of being like a child advocate. And fortunately, right before I started graduate school is when I met my now husband, and he's a lawyer. And he was like, you're going to hate law school. Don't do it. So we stuck with MSW, but Tom's what made me do the change.
Yeah. Yeah. I always love looking back like that of like, there's small moments or right or like specific people that you're like, had they not kind of intersected my life at that very moment, you know, would it be different? And, you know, thinking all the way back to grad school, you know, I had one of those professors that like said, you know, some things that very, very first class, very first day of grad school about the licensing procedure. And I had no desire to go into private practice, had no desire to do that. And he laid out the plan to, you know, get licensed. And it was always kind of like this, well, if you can't find a job, at least you could work for yourself. And didn't know eventually I would find myself in that position. But had it not been for him, who knows, you know?
Yeah. So I've been in private practice on my own now since COVID. So going on 4 years. Well, it's a little over 4 years, actually. But before that, you know, for the 15 years before that, I worked for a huge mental health program that then was under the auspices of Shepherd Pratt, which is a big mental health hospital and system here in the East Coast. And the main campus is in Baltimore, in Towson. And starting as a therapist, and I really did it because I'm a mom, right? Mm-hmm. So prior to that, as you said, I worked in what are called non-public level 5 schools. So I was a school therapist slash school social worker for probably about 7 or 8 years in schools for children who were classified as it's all been changed. So it's dated information, but seriously emotionally disturbed. Mm-hmm. And that emotional disturbance impacted their academics such that they needed to be in a different school. So that's what level 5 schools were. It was the level of care.
Okay.
So all of the schools, all of the children that I worked in, the children would receive individual, sometimes family therapy. They had psychiatrists included. So it was a very all-encompassing type of school. And so I had years of that and, you know, working directly with the kids and the families, which I really loved. But then becoming a mom, that was really hard. And I wanted to, after my second child, I wanted to be home more. And I didn't want to work, you know, 45, 50 hours a week anymore. So when my daughter was born, I started to work in outpatient mental health clinics. So that kind of got me out of the kind of, you know, multidisciplinary, even though we did have psychiatrists, but like, you know, individual therapy, family therapy, couples therapy. And I just realized how in a different environment where it wasn't, you had to think about 20 other different things where you could just focus on the mental health. I really, really enjoyed that. And it gave me the flexibility that I needed as a mom. And then as time went on, I went on to run clinics. So I was the director of a couple of the clinics at the same time. And with that supervision, which I still love. So supervising either graduate interns or, you know, recent graduates who are going for their clinical licensure, you know, depending on what state you're in, the 2,000 to 3,000 hour, you know, licensure. I love doing that because I would love hearing, again, I'm a problem solver.
Yeah.
So going back to that, having someone be like, I'm stuck. what do I do? And I'm like, here's 30 things. Try one of them.
Yeah.
And then coming back and hearing like, all right, I tried five. What are the other ones again? You know, like, and
Yeah.
just kind of going back and forth with that, I really enjoyed. But going into burnout, you know, running three clinics, having two children and a family, and my one child is autistic, and it was just a lot of just,
Yeah.
you know, waking up in the morning until the moment I went to bed at 1 in the morning, all day, you know, hamster
Yeah.
wheel. And when COVID hit, and I was director of programs, and we had to transfer 3,000 patients, not me by myself, but all the
Yeah,
directors.
but it's part of a large system.
Correct. From in person to online and figuring out how they're going to get their medications, how, like, all these
Yeah.
different things we had to figure out. I mean, it was going into like 70-hour work weeks and still being a mom and the kids being at school
Yeah.
at home and all the things that we all experienced during COVID. And with that, I was like, I had been burned out for the longest time. And I think, and this is just my personal opinion, and I think a lot of people are of the opinion that we kind of, for some reason, clinicians have like this badge of honor of like, I overwork, right?
Yeah.
So doctors and nurses, like people kind of in just like the helping field,
Yeah.
you know, it's like you're not working hard enough unless you're overworked.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not giving enough if I still have more to give.
Right.
That to me, like when I woke up one day and I was like, what am I doing? Like literally one day I was just like, I'm exhausted. I can't anymore.
Yeah.
And I had a change in supervisors, which was a huge change. Like just I had to do things differently. But just the drive wasn't there
Yeah.
to keep on that hamster wheel. So I just said, you know what? I just let the reins go and I said, I'm gonna go into private practice. I had been there, as I said, for almost 15 years.
Wow.
And I just said, I had to save myself. So actually
Yeah.
that's one of the trainings that I'm doing is, you know, I called it stress SOS. And it's not just the smokestack that you get when you're thinking about SOS. Like I thought about save ourselves, SOS. We got to save ourselves, right? So, you know, figuring out how to deal with overwork, overwhelm, knowing when we're getting there so that hopefully we can put the brakes on and scale it back and not have to go to the place where I was and where so
Sure.
many of us have found ourselves of just being
Yeah.
single.
Yeah. When you look back, what are some of the signs that maybe you didn't notice at the time, or maybe you did? Like, what were things telling you that, hey, I'm burned out? It's not just that I'm stressed, but I'm burned out.
I think the biggest thing that I noticed, and then I worked backwards, and so that's kind of when I work with people too, is I realized that I wasn't having fun doing things that I enjoyed, you know, and it was kind of like, oh, all right. You know, and even just like getting together with like my friends
Yeah.
and, you know, going out to brunch, which I love to do. And I love to eat, you know, or going to a cooking class or just like things that I love, that was a chore
Yeah.
because I was just too tired to do it. And this kind of building apathy of, you know, I only have so much energy. And, you know, as for me as a mom, I gave it all to my kids and to my husband. And I work took my brain energy, family took like my heart energy, and then there was just nothing left for me.
Yeah.
And getting over the idea that I tell all of my clients, don't think that way, but like, is it selfish to want to put me somewhere in that mix?
Right.
That was the big thing for me when I realized it was a chore to do stuff that I loved. That was like my big, I'm burned out.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like as women clinicians, let me back up because I feel like we all, for those of us that saw people during the pandemic, everybody was experiencing some kind of burnout, regardless of the field they worked in. And I feel like those of us that are mental health clinicians that kind of went through that with people, we ourselves experienced burnout through that. But like in a different way, we were on the front lines of the pandemic, because we were dealing with the mental health aspect of it, and everybody, because of the isolation, because of the deaths, because of the fear, the anxiety, right? Like, we were dealing with it. And then you add in like the parenting piece that so many of us as women were experiencing at home, and that you heard clients talk about burnout. But I feel like in our profession, like, we know mental health clinicians, we are prone to burnout. If they don't talk about it in grad school, they need to, but we are prone to burnout because of the work we do. And I feel like there is a different part of ourselves that we have to give when we are in the seat as a therapist versus like when I'm doing something that doesn't require me to be client facing, right? Like, it's a different part of myself that is being given. And while I am not joining my clients in the sense of like enmeshment or in the sense of, you know, that I'm caring for you the same way I care for my child, I am still giving of you emotionally and mentally, right? Like, we've had those days where you see, you know, clients and you're like, I am physically exhausted, but all I've done is sit in a chair. Right. But it is a
compassion fatigue. Yeah.
Exactly. And so there is this part of ourselves that easily can get burnt out in that work, but then you go home or you step outside your office door and the kids are waiting there for you, or the partner is waiting there for you, and they're needing this emotional part of yourself as well. Obviously it's a little different, but you're like, where, like you said, where is the time for me? And I think, I don't know, we're, our profession, especially as women and especially as moms and caretakers, we are just like ripe for this burnout.
I agree completely. And, you know, just to stay on like women and moms, okay, because that's who we are. And that's who I would describe myself as first, right? Like, as a mom, probably first, and, you know, a wife, then a therapist, then, you know, somebody like then, you know, and when you have all of those things, and for me, what changed a lot when I became a mother working with children was their stories, you know, their traumas. And I'm also a trauma specialist, right? So their traumas became real.
Yeah.
You know, like, it, you know, when my daughter was five and, you know, I had a child who was, went through this horrific trauma that we found out on intake, that, you know, child hadn't shared it. No one had ever asked the question. And, you know, at intake, it goes, oh, have you ever? And you check the boxes and you fill out all the stuff. And I just remember, you know, hearing that mother just wail, you know, hearing, you know, this terrible thing and it hitting me differently, right? And weighing differently on my heart, because it was like, I had a five-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time. Right. And I still remember like that, you know, you talk about like those moments of time. That was one of those moments in time where it really changed me as a clinician, because I could come from not just the clinical standpoint of here's what we do. And, you know, here's our evidence-based practice and all this kind of stuff, but to be human. And, you know, that was probably maybe like my 10th year of being a therapist. I'd been a therapist for a while at that point. And I just remember saying, I need to put me more in this so that I can have that. But having said that, the compassion fatigue and being a trauma therapist and working in a place where, you know, oh, you only work 60 hours this week? That was nothing. Oh, you had lunch? Oh, aren't you big girl, you know?
Yeah.
And it was really like a badge of honor. And it was a badge I did not want to wear. To me, it was something that I should take off, put in a box and burn it in the fireplace. You know, like, that is not something to wear. So I think when we go back to, we think about like all of the roles that we do and we don't put ourselves first. Right? Like, we're like in the back of the line of all of the things that need to be done, that when we are done, we're finished, we're tapped out by the seventh thing, but we're 10th in line. Then it just builds up. So, you know, when I talk about burnout, it's knowing how you got there or when you're getting there, and then how do you work backwards? So for me, like I said, when I realized I didn't enjoy things, then I started to work backwards for myself too. And I started to talk to other people and I started to study burnout more about like, okay, I don't enjoy things. But before that, like I still kind of enjoyed going out with like my girlfriends, but not taking a cooking class. Why? Right. And so I just kept going backwards and asking myself why? Because I did not want to leave the field. Like I love what I do. Absolutely love it. And I tease with people that I supervise that I totally geek out on learning different things. And it was a joke at my old job that when we needed, an expert at something, somebody who needed to go to the 40-hour course to do something, I'd be like, I'll do it. Like, I just love to learn and I love to figure out. It's how I'm built. And I realized how I'm built, I had to change the walls a little bit because it's natural in me to step up and step in. And I need to realize that stepping up doesn't mean 100%. It's got to be 90 because I need 10% for me. And figuring out how to do that when I hadn't ever,
Well, I was going to say, I think again, a lot, I've seen this a lot from clinicians kind of on the other side of the pandemic of this, I'm burnt out. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Or like, I do love this work, but like, I'm just exhausted. I need something else. What can those that are listening, if they are like on the verge of burnout, or if they find themselves in that place, like how can we do what we love, but not, like you said, not sacrifice happiness or health, right? Because burnout isn't just like, oh, I'm not happy anymore, but like you may be, dealing with a heart attack or heart palpitations or, stomach ulcers or insomnia, whatever it may be. How can we still stay connected to this field if it's something that we are passionate about, but not get taken down by it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think willingness to change. What you just said to me actually struck a note in another one of those moments. So I had a health issue where I literally thought I was having a heart attack. And it's heart issues are in my family. It ended up being reflux, like really bad. But in that moment, I was like, my son was very, very high needs at the time. My daughter, I wanted to give her the same amount of energy. My husband, worked incredibly long hours, and I'm running three clinics, supervising up to like 40 people, depending on where we were. And it was just when that happened, I was like, okay, like it was another one of those, I need to readjust. And I went down, it sounds funny, I went down to running only one clinic. And then I wanted to do kind of like a passion project. So I started to work in a school, a private school, where I was a school counselor, where I could help, but it was like immediate help. I'm having a problem with my parents. I'm having an issue with a friend. I need some mediation. So some, I don't want to say smaller scale, but like more immediate and where you could see the difference, where, Sally and Amy are fighting, and then they meet with you and they're not fighting anymore, and you could actually see the change. I think that's another thing with therapists, right? Sometimes we don't feel what we're doing as helpful if, especially if we have long-term clients or clients that have, high needs. So for me, that was the first switch to reduce. And then I added something, but I added something that gave me like joy, right? So like kids would stop by my office, I had a little candy bowl, and they'd be like, oh, you got the strawberry ones I like, and they were just cute, and it gave me kind of like something to smile about, right? And that's where I started, when I stepped back and I was willing to recognize I could not continue what I was doing if I wanted to be healthy and happy in there. And the whole put your oxygen mask on first, right? We've all heard that a zillion times, but it's true. So I changed what I was doing, and that was the start. And then slowly, and I stayed with that one clinic, and then I went back up to doing more clinics. But I continued to make changes, and that start made me kind of on the path that I am now, to keep refining, changing. So I'm not just the trauma therapist you know, who works with this type of client that's the most,
Sure.
you know, the most difficult was like, you know, difficult meaning like intensive,
Yeah.
right? Clients. I could do that, but I can't do 30 of those. I
Yeah.
can do five,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know, and I need to mix in other types of things, you know. So that led me into like, all right, if I'm going to do trauma, but I want to bring it in differently, why don't I try to go to a yoga teacher training? Now that's, everyone was like, you're nuts. You just did a two, like a full on, I'm like a legit yoga teacher,
Yeah.
or could be. I haven't done it ever, but I did it for the intention of bringing it into sessions.
Yeah.
So trauma-informed yoga, I could use it for myself,
Yeah.
you know, as a regulation. I think what happens with burnout is living in a state of dysregulation,
Yeah.
right? And then that dysregulation becomes the norm. And when we normalize being dysregulated, or when we become comfortable with being dysregulated, then we don't even know we need to change gears.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're almost like existing like a zombie, right? Like, because yeah, you are dysregulated, but again, you're like, I don't know what else to do, or it's just kind of on this hamster wheel. And I think, at least in my personal experience as a mom, I feel like we are just prone to dysregulation so much easier than people who don't have children. Simply because we're trying to regulate ourselves in the midst of children who don't know how to regulate themselves, and we're trying to help them. And it's like this like attack on our like nervous system that we're trying
Absolutely.
to stay calm and help them. So yeah, and then we're also trying to like regulate ourselves in sessions with clients and stuff too, right? So yeah, I think that idea of like that, it's just like a constant dysregulation. But I love something that you said about this idea of change, because I don't think as a profession we like change, and we are not always like open to it. But I think people are becoming more open to it, and I think as individual clinicians it can be hard to think about like, well, what does change look like, right? Like, does it look like leaving my clinic job and going into private practice? Does it look like going from three clinics to one? Does it look like going from seeing 40 clients a week in private practice down to 10, you know, or whatever it might be, or changing your schedule that like it doesn't serve me to see them past this time anymore? And one of the things I oftentimes hear, specifically in private practice, around this idea of I need to change something, whether it's taking away days or taking away times, or I need to take time off for myself, that there's this like fear of like, but what about the clients? And will I be able to see clients, or will they want to work with me if I'm not available at these times? And my personal experience and what I have seen with others is that when we do make that change, it feels really scary, but it's not as detrimental as we think it will be to the practice. It's actually still thriving in different ways, and it serves us better because we're not dysregulated from that overscheduling or overbooked or too, as you said, kind of like challenging of a type of client in those times. And so to just not be afraid of that, right? To not be afraid of whether it means leaving a certain area of the field or changing the way your schedule is, or however, whatever that may look like that you're kind of toying with, to not be afraid of it. It's scary for sure, but it can lead to bigger and better things. You being
Absolutely.
healthy is a big one of them.
Yeah. And if for some reason it doesn't, that change isn't the change you needed, change it again, you
Right.
know? So if going into a private practice hadn't worked out for me, which, you know, thankfully it did. And, but if it hadn't, I would have changed something else. I knew what
Yeah.
I was doing. I think that as clinicians and as moms too, that what we fear in the change is what if it doesn't work out? And
Yeah.
I think the next step of that is, if it doesn't work out, I can do something else again,
Yeah.
right? And in the same way that you said, you know, your professor said, well, if it doesn't work out, you can always work for yourself,
Right,
right?
right.
So if this doesn't always work out, what can I do? And part of what I say in with burnout, and what I did for myself in my own burnout, was I always have a contingency plan. I always feel like I always tell people, I have a contingency plan. if I'm going to do this, I'm going to, you know, I used to work from very evidence-based stuff. So like you give yourself a time period or not even a time period, but a thing. Like, so for me is I wanted to go back out and I enjoyed it. Like it, if it took me a week or a year, like that was where I wanted to go back to say, okay, I'm back to being this. And I started to say, I remembered two things that no was a full sentence.
Yeah.
Decisions, but no is a full sentence. And if you can just say no, because I always felt like I had to justify, which also led to my burnout.
Yeah.
Because I felt like if I didn't justify it, it wasn't justified.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if I say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't see you at 8 p.m. No, I'm not working at 8 p.m.
Right.
I had to say, because I have to get my kids down. And then that's when it's this. And that, I had to give all of these reasons.
Yeah.
Why I said no was a good enough answer.
Sure.
And then the other thing that I said is I'm a yes. That was another thing when we talk about moving my walls.
Yeah.
Is that I said, I teach with people now, but it took me a while to get there. And I'm like, don't invite me to do something because I'm a yes. If I can do it, I will do it. If it's something fun, if it's something different, if it's something that's interesting. And that led me into going to retreats. So clinical retreats. When I realized my burnout, and I realized, okay, I wasn't quite getting burned out from private practice. I was very fortunate. I feel like I need to knock on 10,000 lids. But I was very fortunate that I filled up pretty quickly. Like when I left my agency job, I said, I just want to have enough clients to make what I made before. Like I didn't have I want to have this full practice. It was, and if you ever worked an agency job, that's not the part of the doing social work. So I exceeded that and I was working full time again when I had wanted to work, you know, 3 days a week. That was my goal. I was going to work 3 days a week. And then it got into 4 days a week. And then it was four full days. And then I had to add a couple on Fridays. And I started getting into that because I had, as so many of us private practitioners have, and especially because we're fee for service, depending on how you get your fee, whether it be insurance or private pay, if you don't work, you don't get paid. And that's just the business side of, you know, what we do. So this kind of like, am I not going to have enough? So I need to overfill for the scarcity of if five people leave.
Right.
And I just had to be like, well, I'm going to keep this number a week. I still keep I changed it. And I made Friday sacred. I don't work on Fridays.
Yeah.
I still do filling or like little things here and there, but I'll do it in my sweats, you know, while there's a TV show on and I'm cuddling my dog. Things that kind of like, you know, I can do those tasks, but enjoy them in some way, right? And I started to build in doing other things and I just started to say no. I figured the number I wanted to hit, and as long as I hit that, if I exceed it, great. But if I exceed it to the point of it's not doing me, you know, it's not serving me anymore, myself, then that's a no. Period, full stop. Yes, period, full stop. Yeah. And if I say yes, I commit to yes.
Yeah.
But that took me a long time. Like I'm saying this in a 1 minute sentence, but it took me a while to do. And that's where my kind of now passion for burnout, where I started as a child and adolescent therapist and a trauma therapist. And now I would say that my caseload has changed so much. And I realized that, you know, in our new world of everybody wanting Zoom, you know, I only have office hours 1 day a week and I don't even have that many people come in. I'm actually Zooming from my office more than otherwise. That it's hard to see young kids and teenagers over Zoom. You've got to be very animated and fun and games and, you know, so I don't do that anymore. I aged up and I usually start around end of high school, college now. And I started seeing a lot of professional women and then they told their friends and that's so like my case slowed now has really shifted a lot. And I found, wow, I really love this. I love kids too. And I can do this other thing. I don't have to be either or. And that was when we talk about niches and all of that. And that is true. It's helpful in the building of the private practice. And I have one. We all have it.
Yeah.
But I also have a passion for other things.
Yeah.
So, you know, starting to go into going to retreats taught me I should probably start providing this. Like I wanted to have people have the feeling I had during and after a retreat.
Yeah.
So, and all kinds of retreats. So I've been to, you know, yoga retreats. I've been to just enjoy like fun, you know, like kind of girls' time retreats. I've been to clinical retreats, which training in the morning and then maybe a little fun in the afternoon. And I think I want to do a little of all of it. So that's what I'm working on now. And what led me to doing this training in burnout was where do we start?
Yeah.
We have to start somewhere. We can't all go on a retreat.
Right.
I couldn't have, my kids are older now. I couldn't have done this 10 years ago. So being able to recognize if we can't give this experience, how can we give an experience of working with burnout in a different way?
Yeah.
Where you can meet people again, the social worker in me, where you can meet people where they are and help them with their needs in the way that they can fulfill them.
Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. If someone is saying, okay, I'm not burned out yet, but you know, I can see the writing on the wall if I don't change something, what are some things that we can do to be proactive to kind of help? I don't know if we can, maybe we can fully prevent burnout or to kind of like keep it at bay. Like how can we, like, I feel like that threat is going to always be there, but how can we kind of, you know, keep it at a distance a bit more? And maybe,
doing things like retreats, like you're talking about, or, you know, maybe you talk about that a little bit in your training, that we'll talk a little bit more about in a second, but what are some things that we can do to help be proactive in that?
I think number one is is boundaries, right? But to define your boundaries. I think so many of us, especially moms, right? We have our boundaries and no, you're not allowed to do this. No, you're not allowed to do that. But if we're exhausted and a little one climbs in the bed and they kick you all night, you just let them and then you don't sleep. And then the next day you're tired, but you know, like this is what being a mom is, right? So sometimes like the boundaries are, you know, if you have a partner, maybe if the little one climbs in the bed, you know, we got to take turns, you know, you got the little one tonight. I'll take it, you know, take the hit next time or whatever. And if you don't, like just having that boundary of like, if my boundary is I'm going to be okay, my little one climbs into bed with me all the time. But that means I don't start sessions until 10.
Yeah.
Right. So that I can get them off to school and like gather myself and have like a decent shower and, you know, like what's going to be that boundary and then stick to it. Right. We talk about boundaries can be malleable and they can, but as long as they're malleable with exception and not as a rule. So I can make an exception to my boundary, whatever it is, but that's not going to be a rule. Right. So like when you and I were setting up, I take 1 o'clock as my lunchtime every day. It's in my calendar blocked out. I don't see people at 1 o'clock. And I made an exception. I bent my boundary because I have a woman I see in person, and she had to pick up her children at 3. So she had to like to get there, she had to be finished by 2:30. So instead of 1 to 2, I made my lunch from 12:30 to 1:30. And to be honest, I'm hardly ever eating lunch. It's just I'm not working.
Yeah.
But I call it my lunchtime.
Yeah.
And I always know that I'm available at that time for me.
Yeah.
And so I changed my boundary a little bit with her, but I kept that hour. And in that hour, I don't do work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't do work. And the other thing is, I think, you know, something that I talk about and I completely made up, it's not clinical, so don't go looking into different books, but I made it up. It's a palate cleanser. That's what I call it. So if you like to eat and go out to eat like I do sometimes, you know, the chefs, if you do different courses, they'll send you a little palate cleanser so you can taste something different, right? So for me, in my sessions, as a clinician and also as my mom, I do a palate cleanser if I can between each one, and if I can't, at least between each two. And what I mean by that is I do a small thing that takes a minute if that's all I have, 10 if I have more, that's just change in everything that I've been doing. So if I've been seeing clients for 2 hours and I need that break, I'll watch like a funny video, or I'll run outside with my dog, or, you know, I'll call a friend. Something that is, I don't want to say mindless, but is not clinical, is not trauma, right?
Yeah.
I just rinse myself of it. I try to make it funny. So like Graham Norton is my go-to. He has little reels on like Facebook and Instagram. They're a minute. And, you know, my client, that's when I realized if I have a back-to-back, my next client can wait 1 minute or 30 seconds for me to watch Graham Norton, for me to get a chuckle, for me to like really like cleanse my palate. And it doesn't just do it for me. It does it for the next person because I'm not
sure.
They don't get burned out, Cynthia, the therapist.
Right. They get better version
who just
of
laughs.
You. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a better version of myself for my kids, for my family, you know, for everyone, my friends, but for me too. If I don't do that for me, I've learned it's made that little thing has made a huge difference for me.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be go away to the Caribbean for a week. That's fantastic. And I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But if you can only do a minute, you know, a couple times a day, start there.
Yeah.
So boundaries and understanding like the things that get us elevated, you know, like when we talk about with our clients, like was your Were you escalating in your anger? Were you doing, you know, think about that for you too.
Yeah.
And what gets you there? And then when you know that, that's when you put something in.
Yeah. Yeah. Share with listeners a little bit about, you mentioned your course about burnout. Share a little bit about what that is and kind of who that's designed to support.
So it's actually designed, it's designed to support anyone right now. So I have a 1 hour, 1.5 hour training right now that's just kind of like, I call it like the quick and dirty. It's like super fast. It's try this, 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 and this. And then a 3 hour one that's a little bit more in depth, that's probably more towards clinicians to be able to provide. But it is understanding what burnout is and understanding what burnout means for you, right? So for each person, and in that training, I have a scale that I made up. It's just a thermometer, right? But that scale, we learn how to answer questions for ourselves. When am I like at my calmest? And you do all the good things. And then you list what are the triggers that are getting you there. So that when you have your triggers and you know that that trigger of, you know, the third session in a row without a break gets you at a 5 and you don't want to get to a 6, what do I need to do when I'm at that third session?
Yeah.
Because I'm at a 5 to take myself down to a 4. We're not trying to always go down to 0 because that's hard to do,
Sure.
especially if you're a parent.
Right, right, right.
It's really hard to be in that complete, you know, bliss. But, you know, that understanding that it can, you could be a little less, you know, and the aim is to be a lot less. But if we start going little by little and identifying what it is, identifying ways that you can, once you get to a 5, get to a 4. Right? Is it breathing? Is it taking a break? Is it watching Graham Norton? Whatever it is for you, those are my things.
Yeah.
You know, but what is it for you? How long is it for you? For me, I can do it in a minute. I love a little longer, you know, and that's why I built in my hour break in the middle of the day. But recognizing all of those things, recognizing what I can do to change those numbers, and then understanding how I can maintain that as a practice. You know, we talk about yoga as a practice, mindfulness as a practice. It's a practice because you have to do it over and over and over and over again to get the results you want.
Yeah.
Not because it doesn't work, but because it works, you continue to do it.
Right. No, I love this idea of like the thermometer, right? Like, I mean, if you've worked with kids before, you know, like that there's that thermometer of like, where are you like calm? Where are you angry? But even like a SUD scale, right, is so similar to something like that. But I love that idea of like, what gets you to that 5? And so if we know that, okay, like this thing is happening and I'm at or close to that 5, again, what are kind of the things I need to put around me or ensure that I have access to or to do to help decrease it? And like you said, it's not realistic to think we're going to go from a 5 to a 0, just to help us to come down to 4 or even 4.5, depending on what's going on. And even that idea of the practice that, you know, when I work with clients and they're talking about, okay, you know, what am I going to do for the week? And I didn't meet my goal. And I said, I always like the idea of an intention versus a goal, because a goal is like this thing that we just like hold so tightly to, versus an intention just gives a little bit more of like this openness to. And so like my intention may be to do my practice daily or 3 times a week, but that life happens and things happen. And maybe I wasn't able to get to it today, but I'm not going to beat myself up over it because I still had the intention to do it. It's not like I prevented myself, but things happened, or I was so dysregulated, I forgot, or whatever it might be. But just what is the intention to examine where burnout is in your life, to set up tools and things around you to try to help manage it and prevent it where you can, and that it's okay if you have if you find yourself in that place of burnout. Like, we've all been there one time or another, but you're not alone.
Right. And forgive yourself.
Yeah.
That's another thing I tell people a lot, and I tell myself, forgive yourself. Like, beating yourself up. And especially when you talked about, like, with your clients, like, I didn't meet my goal.
Yeah.
You know, there are days that I forgot to take that minute.
Yeah.
You know, or somebody, you know, when you're on a Zoom and the next one's, you know, going ting, 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 you know, and you got to wrap it up and go to the next. You know, it's my intention As you said, it's my practice to take a minute break. But if I didn't get them all, then like maybe at the end of the day, or I'll try again tomorrow, or whatever it is, just to kind of recognize you might burn out for the day, but let's not burn out for a long period of time for your life. Change. Just take some change and forgiveness.
If listeners wanted to connect with you or to learn more about your work, where can they find you?
So my website's the best place to start, and that is www.almacounseling.net. And I spell that out and I make sure you say .net because there is an Alma that I didn't know at the time because I was in a different kind of field. And I named, actually, it's funny, I explained this on my website, I think, is Alma is the Spanish word for soul. And so my father used to always say, you have to do, he would say in Spanish, you have to do everything with your heart and your soul if you want to get anything out of it, right? Like put yourself into it. And so in honor of him and just like, because I heard that all the time, I was like, I'm putting my soul into this.
Yeah.
And I'll join you where your soul needs to be so that we can work together and you know, move forward and move better. But, you know, so like my products, the I'm working on a book. We'll see how long it takes to get it finished, of like different activities and retreats, both clinical and, you know, just anyone can come and want to do kind of like working with women who are maybe in like their mid 40s to 50s and on, and being like, what's your second act, right? My kids are grown up. What do I do now? Right? And so kind of how, what's that next chapter look like? And I love the idea of like being in an incubator, you know, like just having these few days where you can be with yourself or with other like-minded people and kind of realize I've made so many discoveries about myself doing that. So if you can't go somewhere, maybe you can just like for a day, get together with your peeps and figure out something. But that's kind of where I'll have and post things to share.
Yeah. And we'll have that linked in the show notes so people can find your website easily there and can connect with you there and see all your offerings and learn more about the retreats. Cynthia, thank you so much for being here today and taking the time to talk about such an important topic with us here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.